Drama We Go
with Jeremy Scott.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, miraculously, we are on the air tonight. It is so good to have you with us. I am Jeremy Scott, and without further ado, we're going to jump right into the subject at hand here, because the UAP report has been released. That was finally released last Thursday, of course, at least 2 months after they initially met in order to discuss that information. And much like I imagined, there is a lot that they still don't understand. It's very indicative by the report. And without picking that apart further, I would just encourage you to go back and check out our special report that we put up on our YouTube channel and on the website, ParanormalRadio.com, last Thursday, just hours after that came out, in which we broke that down. And we also talked more about that last night on WABC with my friend Frank Morano in New York City on his program. So lots out there as far as my takes on this. But again, the experiencer is being kept out of the conversation once again. I don't know why they don't want to talk to the experiencer. Well, I know why. Because if they started talking to the experiencer, and if they started hearing about these intense experiences, and we're talking about everything from abductions to planting seed and the whole nine yards, the experimentations that are going on, I think that would scar some people. And I don't think that they're ready to discuss that, unfortunately. But we're going to bring the experiencer back into the conversation tonight with a good friend of the program, Grant Cameron, who has earned a credible reputation in the field of ufology, disclosure, and consciousness, winning the Leeds Conference International Researcher of the Year and UFO Congress Researcher of the Year awards. And as you've heard him discuss at length here on the program, he became involved in ufology in 1975. That was when he witnessed a UFO in Canada known as Charlie Red Star. And that led to a lifetime of research that continues even today. After experiencing a mental download in 2012, he turned his research interest to the role of consciousness in the UFO phenomena, which has expanded to the possible involvement of extraterrestrials. He has lectured widely in Canada, the United States, and Europe, appeared on many television documentaries, and testified in Washington, D.C. as part of the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure in 2013. In 2016, he testified in front of a panel of reporters in Brantford, Ontario, for the first public hearing in Canada on UFOs, and he's written two books specifically that just might tie this all together on this Ride on the Wild Side with Grant Cameron. Welcome to the program, Grant. So good to have you back.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks for your interest, and let's do it. It sounds exciting.
So what do you make of this UAP report?
It's what I predicted. I guess I see it a little bit different than most people do. I wrote a couple of books. One was called UFOs, Area 51, and Government Informants. And that deals with this whole deal that the government is controlling narrative or aspects of the government. So it's not, you may have maybe 0.1% of the government knows what's going on, if even that. But what you have here is the way I read this new report is that they've got control of the situation, and they're now pulling it back in. So you'll see that they're changing words in terms of they're not using anything provocative like ET or off-world or any of that kind of stuff. They're basically putting it in a position where they can now go back to saying this can be any sort of natural phenomena. We don't know what it is. And they're basically in charge of the situation. They're basically saying, defy us. That's the way it sort of works in Washington now. You just do something and say, try and stop us. And so they basically are going to reel this thing back in. People will refer to the fact that in the bill that was passed, it talked about the immunity. But I keep reminding people that you have to understand how this whole game is played. That is immunity to talk in a skiff with Congress or to talk to the Pentagon in a skiff with classified material. There is no way that I see that they are going to allow any person who has worked on the UFO program to come out and tell the Russians and the Chinese what we know about UFOs and where we're testing the program. There's absolutely no way they're going to do that. This is a situation where they are basically challenging this. And they basically, I refer back to in UFOs, Area 51 and government informants. We talked an awful lot about a guy by the name of Dr. Eric Walker, who was the former president of Penn State University. He was chairman of the board of the Institute for Defense Analysis, the top military think tank in the United States. He was also on the Defense Science Board. He had 14 honorary doctorate degrees, whatever, whatever. And we discovered that this guy knew everything. He knew what was going on. He didn't deny it. The first phone call was, we understand you were at a series of briefings at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base dealing with the recovery of a UFO and extraterrestrial bodies. And he said, yeah, I was there. So what? And this has started 8 years of various researchers, not me, but I was sort of coordinating this thing, trying to get this guy to talk. And at one point, he basically cut off the guy and he said, let me ask you a question. He said, you just want this. You're curious, right? Admit it. That's all you want. You're curious as to what's going on. Correct. And he said, why should we change the rules to satisfy your curiosity? So if you're the black ops guy or the guy who controls this, you say, who cares? Let them cry. Let them do whatever they want. We have this and we are not going to release it to people who are not cleared to know about this subject. This is highly classified. This is how you rule the world or don't rule the world. If the Russians figure this out, we're in a lot of trouble. And we are not about to release anything because all you do is if you say, for example, with the first report, it sort of indicated, oh, well, you know, that there may be something to this. And then what does that lead to? It leads to like 3,000 reporters asking you the next question. Then you answer that. And that's another 3,000 questions on the next one. And it's just one question after another until they basically have got it all out of you. So what they've basically done here is basically have done even worse than Blue Book. We complained all these years about Blue Book, which is closed in December of 1969. Said this is absolutely horrible. It was a PR exercise and they just scammed us and they lied to us and stuff. What has changed here? The only thing that has changed is in Blue Book, you had the shapes and the those sort of things, the any photographs that were taken. You had the person's report. You knew who the person was. What have we got here? You don't have anything. You don't have. They say, well, somebody asked, what was the shape? They said, can't tell you. It's classified. They say, you know, what are the reports? Oh, it's confidential. That's classified. We're not releasing that. And basically, what have you got? Said first report said 144 cases, and one of them we identified. Like whoop-de-doo. And now they say, oh, now we got 361 cases or whatever it is, and that's all we're going to tell you. So the next report will be 547 reports, and it's just going to go on. And they simply are not going to release anything that's classified material, which is basically the whole story as to what is this really? And I've got different interpretations of what this might be and why they're withholding some of it. And the other things you got to remember is the people who are behind this. For example, you hear about this invisible college of people who might testify, who like Eric Davis and people like that. What you got to remember is that these people who are in the invisible college say, well, we can't come out because, you know, people are going to make fun of us and all this sort of stuff. One of the big reasons they're not coming forward is because everybody's trying to get a patent. We have the one patent that we know that was gotten from ET Technology. And we know that it sold on NASDAQ for $100 million. This is big time money that people have, even little pieces of it, like the metal. You hear about the metal. Well, we can't, you know, the metal that's had lined up and, you know, we really don't know this. We really don't know that. And it's just a sort of a roundabout game. And anybody who's got the actual anything that's concrete is sitting in the background and basically saying this is classified material. So what they're doing now is I interpret it with this leak of getting this all going. Part of what they're doing is they're getting the white world involved, because what has happened is I maintain that they have no knowledge about what's going on. They have hardware. They were actually gifted an entire craft from the rumored stories. And if you read the Wilson leak document, at the very end of the Wilson leak document, it says, we have a craft and we think it'll fly. And that means they got a craft and they can't turn it on. If they could fly it, they would fly it. They're saying they're not flying it. They say, we think it'll fly, even though it's intact. And so what they're doing now is, because the way it works in the classified world is that everybody has a little piece. So you got your piece, I got my piece, this person's got a body, and none of us are allowed to talk to each other. So it's all what they call stovepipes. It's all in these little stovepipes, and nobody's talking to anybody, and they haven't figured out anything. Eric Davis, who's one of the big names in behind the scenes here, said that they took it off the chart in 1989, and then they take it off the shelf every 7 or 8 years, and they still can't figure it out, which is what was known as the core story, where Hell put off Jacques Vallée and Kit Green, two, three of the top guys, sat together in a Denny's restaurant. They've confirmed to me this actually happened, and they sat down and they said, what do we know for sure? There's so much garbage going around about UFOs. What do we really know for sure? And they came up with what was called the core story. We know we're being interacted by some sort of intelligence. Number two, we have hardware. And number three, we aren't having any success at all in back engineering this hardware. And I say it's all because of the consciousness connection. And that's the book I just finished. It was called UFO Sky Pilots. And I interviewed 36 people, and these people were not on the internet. This is now sort of open, so now I don't really count the cases anymore. But before I made the book public, I was the only one who had the data. It's not, you can't find this data on the internet. And it basically deals with people who claim they've flown the craft. And I interviewed 36, and that included top guy from the CIA. That included United Airlines 747 pilot. That included a fighter pilot from Iraq who's a retired U.S. Air Force colonel. And they all basically tell the same story. And it tells this story about consciousness, the fact that consciousness is the key to this whole thing. And that's why they can't turn the craft on. That's why they can't fly this craft, according to me, is that you need a hand. You need a conscious interface to turn this thing on, like your cell phone needs a thumbprint or something like that. You need the right person to put their hand on a panel to make this thing start. Otherwise, it has no steering wheel, it has no engine, it has nothing. And that's the whole deal. That's part of the big thing that they're trying to hide, is their absolute inability to do it. So what they're trying to do now is they're putting it out, and you see the Galileo project now going, and everybody's working on it, and everybody's talking about it. You got all these the smartest people in the United States working on it in white world. And anybody who ever comes across anything, I maintain, if they come across something that has to do with UFO propulsion, they solve it or whatever they come up with. Some official is going to walk in with a national security order, is going to say, stop working. This is not classified. Do not publish. Do not talk what you're talking about. And it'll get sucked into the black world. And that's basically, I think, what's happening is that the black world has got control of this thing, and they really don't care. That's what Eric Walker said to us. Why should we change the rules to satisfy your curiosity? And according to the rumors, when President Carter was briefed in his intelligence briefing, he asked about the UFOs, and he was told curiosity is not sufficient, need to know. And that's what it all comes down to, as far as I'm concerned.
So, Grant, when we talk about flying the craft, because this is a wild report, we're not talking about doing so physically. We're talking about what, with the mind?
Yeah. So what people will all describe is the same thing. They'll describe that they are suddenly on a craft. I don't really, maybe one or two I recall where they said that they walked into the craft. And that's one of the regrets I have in the research, is that now I know the questions I should have asked. Because, for example, people would report, I put my hand on the panel. One guy from Liverpool said, I put my hand on this panel. It was on the wall. He said, I could suddenly see in through.
We were losing Grant, and I think he now just officially got sucked into a black hole. But such is the energy in the studio tonight. We're going to see if we can reconnect with Grant Cameron. Hopefully this is better. Grant, pick up right where you were. Oh, no. Now we've lost him. We've lost him for good. Because it is literally like you got sucked into a black hole. You know, which shouldn't surprise anybody who listens to this show. I know it probably doesn't surprise Grant, because once you start talking about this, he was just actually talking about the silencing and how once you do start to talk about it and you open up this can of worms, there are people in low places who will put you out. Grant, are you back with us?
Yeah, it says my mic isn't working here.
Okay, hang on. We got you now. We got you now, so don't touch anything. All right.
Okay.
He's been we rescued him from the black hole. My goodness.
Yeah.
Stick with us, Grant. Hang tight. Hold on tight. We'll be back with Grant Cameron. I told you it was going to be a ride on the wild side tonight. I just didn't have this in mind. More with Grant Cameron after this.
Paranormal News. Scientists at Columbia University are working on building conscious robots that can learn and adapt to situations in real time. It's one of the most controversial parts of artificial intelligence because it would be a game changer to human life. Mechanical engineer Hod Lipson of the university's Creative Machines Lab tells the New York Times that humanity will one day rely on robots for a variety of tasks, and they will need to be self-aware to do so. He envisions operating on patients, helping raise children, and possibly curing disease. Physicist Isaac Arthur tells Into the Paranormal, it's only a matter of time before a machine is on par with human consciousness.
Assuming the basic computationism idea of the mind is right, that you can mimic a mind with computation, then we're going to get there, and probably not too far over the horizon, I guess 10 to 20 years earliest, but we could be there today for all we know.
The team has already built self-aware machines that can draw pictures and simulations of themselves, even recognize itself in a mirror. Conscious robots would be able to self-diagnose problems and correct mistakes. I'm George Henry, Paranormal News.
Unidentified aerial phenomena are a potential national security threat, and they need to be treated that way.
We have seen an increasing number of unauthorized and or unidentified aircraft or objects in military-controlled training areas and other designated airspace.
The U.S. intelligence community has no evidence that those mysterious flying objects are aliens, but they're not ruling it out.
Just under half of these are exhibiting remarkable characteristics.
Does this phenomenon seem to be under intelligent control?
That's the only thing it could be.
Whatever phenomena we are dealing with doesn't live in this physical reality. It lives in some other reality, and it can pop in and it can pop back out.
Like astral travel through space, you never know where you'll land. We can guarantee it will be Into the Paranormal.
My guest is Grant Cameron. His books, UFO Sky Pilots, Pilots of Peace and Oneness, and The Ride, The Paranormal World of UFOs and Life Itself. We're going to go deep with him tonight, and we've only scratched the surface. So, Grant, right before we lost you, do you remember what you were saying?
I don't know when I lost you. I'll start from flying the craft, how this happens, the reports that I've got.
Yeah, you have dozens of reports, and then you stopped counting, basically, is what we heard.
Yeah, and that's because now it's public. So now people can say they were, you know, flying a flying saucer, and how are you going to check it? Before, I could check it because I'm the only person that knew that people were reporting this. So basically, people would report a lot of very interesting things that if you pay attention to what they're saying, can give you some indications of what's going on. Number one, they find themselves on a craft. They're suddenly, instantly on a craft, and they it starts to indicate this idea that the abduction experience may not be what we think it is, because these people, they don't report being taken out of their room or moving through space or whatever. They just say they're suddenly on a craft. And there's somebody behind them, which turned out to be very important. Just last week, I got a hint at what that might be. There's somebody behind them. I'll tell you that, for example, this guy's name is David out of Los Angeles. He was a former U.S. Air Force retired colonel, flew combat in Iraq. And he said, I'm there, and these beings are behind me. And their beings are humans. He said, I can't tell whether it's beings or humans. He said, I'm standing in the middle of this craft, and then they say, okay, go ahead and do it. And he says, I don't know what to do. Everybody says the same thing. I don't know what to do. And they go, You know what to do. Just do it. He sees this panel along the side wall. He goes over to this panel and he puts his hands on this panel. And he said, suddenly he's flying the craft. And he said, it was just like an F-16, except what his description was, it felt like suction cups on an F-16, whatever that is. And he said, so I'm flying the craft. He said, it was the most bizarre thing. And this is where it comes. You had a story there about artificial intelligence. And when you look at what these people are describing, they are describing artificial intelligence. They are describing what artificial intelligence is going to look like 1,000 or 5,000 years from now. The craft is alive. It's conscious. So people will maintain, oh, you're going to get a machine and it's going to, we're suddenly going to get, put consciousness into the machine and it's going to become conscious. And I say, baloney. This is not going to happen because consciousness is primary. If you go back to the original quantum physics guys, they all said consciousness is primary. Consciousness breaks down the wave potential that creates the matter. Matter comes in and it's not until there's an observer that matter appears. So consciousness is primary. And so you have this artificial intelligence, and what it has is not some consciousness you grab and put in it. It's biological. So all people all say the same thing. I put my hand on the panel. I suddenly was one-on-one with the craft. And this oneness concept, as I say, is the number one principle that the entities are trying to teach us, this oneness principle. It's like a beehive. We're all working together. It's this, and there, you become one with the craft. What I think is what the craft thinks, and what the craft thinks is what I think. You become linked into the craft. And whatever you think is what the craft will do. So then they'll say to people, they'll say, okay, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? So then I'll give you one guy out of Utah. He said, well, I'd like to see the Milky Way from a distance. From distance. And they said, okay, he's sitting in a chair and he's got his fingers in these at the end of these chairs. And everybody says the same thing. The chair is like it's built for them. It's like it totally molds their body. And he says, I got my fingers in the ends of this chair. And they said, okay, it's going to be very intense G-force for 1 second and then we'll be there. But first of all, and they all say, this is the important part. They say, okay, it's within you. Go within yourself and imagine it. And they keep saying it overnight. It's within you. It's within you. Imagine where you want to go. That's where, then you'll go there. And the person, so this guy imagines himself outside the Milky Way and he said it was 1 second, intense G-force. He said 1 second, almost like they were flipping through the, like a pages of a book, going through the page of a book as he interpreted to be dimensions, but it may be whatever. He feels this for less than a second, but he said it's very intense. And he said the window was open. He looked out and there was the Milky Way off in the distance. And I say that if that is true, if he's reporting that story accurately, he's like 50 to 70,000 light years away in 1 second, which would tend to indicate something we understand about time and space is not correct, because people will describe this all the time. There's two women that were taken at the same time, and they described the fact that they had their hands on this panel, and they were told the same thing. You've got to imagine it. It's inside you. It's inside you. Go there. And they said they could go instantaneously anywhere in the galaxy. They could think wherever they wanted to go, and they would instantly be there, almost like a remote viewer. If you see how the remote viewing is done, they give the guy the target 7, 6, 5, 3, 2, 1, and then the guy goes, oh, I'm at the target. It happens instantly. It's not something. And this comes down to this idea. What is really going on? Is this person actually on a ship or is this out of body? There's a number of them. The head of MUFON for Japan described 22 experiences he had last year alone. He's an expert. He used to be out of Washington State. He moved to married a girl in Japan. And he said it's all out of body. He said he's had encounters with the Greys. He's been on the ship. He's done all the stuff. He's flown the ship. They've pulled books out of the wall. They just put their hand up to a wall, and the book will come out of the wall of the ship. They can make the ship as big as they want, which is another thing. If this is true, and there's a lot of people reporting this, if this is true, where, for example, Terry Lovelace, who is described his experience being on a ship. He said when he went inside, it was the size of a football stadium on the inside. There was a guy who was taking photographs of panels who was brought to outside of Norton Air Force Base. And he said, I could have taken a football and thrown it in any direction and not hit a wall. guy in New Zealand told me, I looked in the left, I could not see the end of the ship. I looked at the right, I could not see the end of the ship. And it was just a small ship. And this is this idea that they say that they can make the ship as big as they want. And the first woman that told me this story, she said that they had ships as big as the solar system, that they could just make the ship as big as they want. So it could be a fact where it can be a small ship. So you could have like a rock. You're walking down in the forest and there's a rock along the side of the road. That could be a civilization inside there. This is the idea, is that it doesn't matter how big the outside is, the inside, they can make it as big as they want. And you start looking at that stuff and you start wondering, like, what's really going on here? Like, is this out of body experience? Is this abduction? And most of the people will start to go to this idea that this is not a physical experience as we think it is. And that goes back to consciousness. It's all consciousness. And the beings have told us forever about this. It's all consciousness, and that your mind is able to do this kind of stuff. And we're locked in this physical universe, and we think that this stuff's going on. Because if you actually go back and you look at the highest levels, what I did when I had my first UFO sighting, I didn't understand what was going on, but I knew enough that somebody had to know what's going on here. So that's why I went after the U.S. presidents. That's why I went after the top people in CIA and was not, hiding my interest in trying to talk to these guys or confront them. And I went after the Canadian government. And the top level people, they all basically say the same thing. For example, Kit Green, who was the control officer for the remote viewing program, says there are no abductions ever. Edgar Mitchell said no abductions. Jacques Vallée says nonsense. You see all these high level guys and you start looking at them and you're saying, well, what's going on? There is an event. These people are describing an event, but is it what we think it is? Is it really the experience? And when you start looking at these events, they can't be happening in the physical world. There's no way you can be popping in and out of places or be interacting with this craft, or the craft being as big as you want on the inside, where, you know, it looks like a 30-foot craft and on the inside it's as big as a solar system. I mean, that is not physical reality as far as I'm concerned. So people describe this, and so you see artificial intelligence, you see this out-of-body experience aspect of it, you see this ability to go anywhere, and this idea it's within you. And that's where we start to go. This may be what the part of the cover-up is. For example, Tom DeLonge went into the Lockheed Skiff, and he was talking to the head scientist from Lockheed Skunk Works. And at the time, Tom DeLonge was hanging around with Stephen Greer. This is back in 2015. And he's taken into the skiff, and the head scientist says, okay, how did they get here? That's all I'm interested in. How did they get here? What's going on? And he says, because he's thinking what Greer told him. He said, I think consciousness is involved. And he said, the head scientist said to him, now you're talking. And he said, that's all the guy wanted to talk about for 45 minutes. He couldn't shut up about consciousness. And that's this whole idea that it may be, as John Wheeler, the famous, the guys that won the Nobel Prize for physics this year, were involved with stuff that John Wheeler worked on. John Wheeler came up with the idea of black holes, of wormholes and stuff. And John Wheeler says there is no out there. And that's the idea that you're starting to come across, is that it's all within us. The analogy that I show that can show you how to understand this is, for example, say you have an out-of-body experience. You're doing astral travel like your commercial talked about as we came in. So you're doing out-of-body experience and you look back at your body as you're above the bed. And you look at your body and you say, is the brain creating consciousness? Is the consciousness in the head? And you're going, no, it ain't. It's up here. I'm the consciousness and I'm floating around the room. And I can see my brain. I can see my head. And the consciousness is not coming from the head. And then the person can turn around and look out the window in his out-of-body state and see the stars and the planets. And so that is in his consciousness. The body's inside his consciousness. Everything's inside his consciousness. And we confuse it because we think it's coming inside our head, because we're using the correlates of the brain to create consciousness. But as soon as the consciousness is ripped away through a near-death experience or through out-of-body experience, then suddenly you realize, like, oh, the consciousness is out here and the body's inside the consciousness. So that's the idea I think they're trying to get across, is it's all within you. Or John Wheeler said from Princeton, he was the successor to Einstein at Princeton. He said, there's no out there. And you start getting this idea, like, this is going to be 1,000 times more complex than people think it is. And it's this idea that they can basically control every element of what's going on, but we can as well. That's what this experiencer from Israel said. When we come into your world, we take on a body. We don't need a body, but we take on a body to interact with you. You can do the same thing, you just don't know it. Or Leslie Kane telling one of the most important stories I ever heard in my life. When I got the interview, I said, Leslie, tell me the story about the hand. You're in Alexander's seance. Did that hand actually appear in front of you? And she said, yeah, it appeared. And she said, it happened two or three times, three or four times, something like that. She said, it didn't just happen once. And so she's sitting at a table. The medium is off in a corner in a box. And this hand starts to appear out of this sort of a whitey, sort of like a sort of a watery type thing coming up off the table. She's sitting at this little tiny table and this hand comes right in front of her. And she says, I feel the fingers. I can feel the knuckles. I can feel the bones. It's warm. It's warmer than a regular hand and it's softer than a regular hand. And she said, it's there. And then she said, it banged on the table a couple of times after she touched it and shook hands with it and stuff. And then it just dematerialized again and went back below the table. And that's what's sort of happening. They're coming into our world and they're materializing. They can materialize because it's all vibration. So they may be at a higher vibrating level and they can come in, but in order to come in here, they need a body. So they'll have their consciousness to come into the body. They'll stay for very short periods of time. If you see all the UFO experiences, they're all very, very short and usually only once, like the flying the ship. There's only one guy that was a 747 airline pilot who experienced it twice, but usually it's a one-time experience, and it basically shows you this idea that it may be so much more complex that it's all within us, and that they're just using our mind to do it. Or even Betty Andreasen, if you ever run across her story, there were 6 books written on her abduction experience. She tells the one story where she's brought back after all these experiences, going here, going there, meeting these different beings or whatever. She comes back. And she's dropped off. She has this glass orb that Chris Bledsoe describes. And she gets out of the orb. There's no propulsion system. It's a clear orb. She can't see anything under the chair. And she gets out and she says, oh, I'm just so happy to be home. And there was my trailer. And I went to the trailer and I went in and my husband was still sleeping. And I went into my room and there I was sitting on the side of the bed. And that is where it's starting to go. It's sort of like, what's really going on here? Is this what we think it is? And it just gets more and more complex. So if you're the black ops guys and you're trying to figure this thing out and you can't figure it out, the last thing you're going to do is tell the Russians what you got. Because it's a game of chicken of putting your cards on the table. If we put our cards on the table and we have 80% of the answer and the Russians have the 20% that we don't have, the Russians say, oh, thank you. We decided we're not going to release what we've got. And now they got the whole secret. And whoever's got this technology, you can see what they can do with this technology. It is unbelievable in terms of the power it has. And there's just no way the Black Ops is going to let go of this thing. Because the way it works in Black Ops, it's called lead time in weapons. So if you build an atomic bomb and you build it one day before your opponent, you win the war. Because that person can't drop their bomb. Or if they haven't started developing it, it's going to be 7 or 8 years for them to develop a bomb. They have to surrender. They can't fight you because your lead time is ahead of them. You can win the war. And that's basically what it comes down to, is that they want as much lead time as possible in front of everybody else. And everything is classified. And what happens is what they did with GPS. They'll tell the stories. Like in World War II, they developed plastic explosives and rubber and plastic explosive, rubber, nylon, jet engines, proximity fuse, atomic bomb, all this kind of stuff, jet engines. And what happens is that once they get the second generation, then they allow the first generation to filter into society. So that's what they did with GPS. GPS, the military had it long before it was seen in the public. And once they had a higher level of GPS, then they allowed the lower level of GPS to be moved into society. So that's the way it's going to work. We're going to get it first. We're going to develop it. We're going to develop weapons. We're going to do whatever we want with it. And then once we get the second generation, then we will allow it to filter into American industry. And which brings up just, and this is my last point. The brings up, Lou Elizondo talks about this. I always say to people that if you're listening to these high level guys like, Eric Davis or Hal Puthoff or, Gary Nolan or any of these guys, listen very carefully. You may not agree with what they're saying, but listen very carefully because from time to time, they let something slip. So Lou Elizondo was talking about this this idea that he's talking this consciousness. Is it off-world or on-world? And he says, well, hang on. There may be all other alternatives. And you're going like, what's he talking? What's he meaning? Like he's saying something. And if we listen to that, then we can start to figure out and piece together what they might know. But in terms of understanding it, they simply I think are pretty far away from it, unless somebody's wrong, because they had the Vietnam War. My experience in 75, people used to say, oh, that's the Americans coming across the border. And I said, well, if it's the Americans, they should be doing better in the Vietnam War, because the Vietnam War just ended. And you see what's happening in Iraq. What are we doing in Iraq? We're still lobbing missiles back and forth. There's no high tech that I can see out of there. There's no crafts that are as big as solar systems. And we're not, you know, if you can get it in someone's head, which they can do, that was the whole deal where the Canadians knew in 1950 that mental phenomena was involved. The reason they may have known was because they had a live alien and the alien was talking in people's heads. I mean, if you could do that, You could rule the world. You could go to Putin and say, this is God. I want you to surrender. I mean, you could do all that. That's the kind of stuff. I don't see we have that kind of technology. We're basically still back in the Stone Age of throwing rocks at each other. And this, when you see this people, and that's why I say you got to listen to the experiencers, because they're telling you what you're going to be seeing down the road. Now, you can look at all the flying saucers in the world, count the red ones and the green ones and whatever, and they'll all be different back through 1895 where they had wooden ships and stuff. They're all going to look different. But when you start talking to experiences, that's when you start to deal with the intelligence, who's actually flying this thing, and you start to figure out what's going on. As long as we're counting UFOs in the sky and that kind of stuff, we're doing that. We did the 1947, and it's like I call it like grade one. And I said, I refuse to go back to grade one for the 48th time. I've been doing this for 48 years. I want to move on. Yes, there's UFOs. They're flying around. Now we got to figure out who's flying the craft. Why are they here? What message do they have? And move on to the next grade in school.
Fascinating stuff, Grant. So I'm wondering, of the possibilities that you've discussed, which do you think is the most likely? Are these our craft? Are they our adversaries' craft? Are they extraterrestrial craft? My opinion is that they're a little bit of both.
They are all higher level vibrations than us. Let me give you an example where, when I talk to these people, they start talking about stuff that becomes very spiritual. For example, they talk about the 360 degrees, which is out of body experience, near death experience. People report it. People who are doing blindfold reading. If you've ever seen these little kids with the blindfold reading, that's what they're doing. They can go 360 degrees. They can see in 360 degrees. So you can start to see this sort of, technology. Now, When you listen to this thing about the people, remember I mentioned the people that were behind, most of them will describe there's somebody behind me and they don't know who it is. So Jim Semivan, you're familiar with Jim Semivan from CIA. Do I have to explain who this guy is?
Oh, you've explained his significance many times, but for those who may not be familiar, okay, give us a quick synopsis.
Yeah, well, he's a high level CIA. He was in the equivalent of a two-star general inside the CIA. He has an experience in the early 1990s. He says, I choose not to use the word abduction, but he's very upset about it. They violated my rights. You know, they didn't have a right to take me. They didn't have a right to do what they did to my wife and all this kind of stuff. And at one point, he's telling the story. And this is where I say, you pick up these things and you go, hey, what did he say? And you go, rewind the tape and say, what did he say there? And he says, so I'm standing there. The guy asks him a question. He says, was there any telepathy involved in your experience that night? And he says, yeah. He says, that's the strange thing. And then he talks about something that didn't have anything to do with ESP. He says, I had this entity standing behind me, and he had this guardian-type thing going on about him. And I said, guardian-type thing? I go, that's Michael Newton. And I suddenly realized what this was, these people standing behind. It may not be aliens. It may not be humans. It may be a spirit guide. Because if you read Michael Newton did the 7,000 regressions of people, took them into their past life, let them die, took them into the spirit world, and became famous for the life between life. He would take them, and they would all go to this life review in front of a panel between 3 and 12 people standing behind this dais, and they would say, how did your life work out? Because you plan it. You did the whole thing. How did it work out? And everybody said, oh, I could do I could have done better. And they would say that behind them on their left-hand side was their spirit guide when they were in this event. So when I heard Jim Semivan said there was this entity behind me and he had this guardian type thing going on, I go, holy cow, that may have been a spirit guide. So I says to the guy interviewing me, I said, hey, you're in contact with Jim? Phone him up, ask him what side this being was on. Was it on his left or his right? And that's when you start seeing these things and you go like, what's really going on here? Is this a spirit guide? Because nobody says, everybody always says it, you know, they really don't know what it is, but it could be a spirit guide. It could be a very spiritual experience.
Halfway through, one more hour to go with Grant Cameron, so don't go anywhere. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Ride on the wild side tonight.
Thank you for making Into the Paranormal the number one podcast on TalkStream Live's Paranormal Radio app.
part abnormal. There's nothing ordinary about what's on your speakers. Into the Paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
Why, right on the wild side, my guest tonight is Grant Cameron. And his website, he's got a blog site, which is whitehouseufo.blogspot.com, and where you can get books and more information. It's all connected. Weebly.com. It is all connected, seemingly. That's what we're understanding tonight. So, Grant, picking back up our conversation, I guess summarize what you were saying right before the break. I mean, we were kind of, you know, bringing consciousness really to the forefront.
Okay, well, I'll give you my guess. Now, we've gone through history where, you know, we believe the world was flat and it's like wrong. We believe the sun went around the earth, wrong. And we believed, you know, there was only one galaxy, wrong. And it just goes on and on. And so this may be just my interpretation for this year, and 100 years now it's completely different. But you can ask the question, are these ET, what are they? So the way I look at it is it goes back to this whole thing where they say when you put your hand on the craft, you become one with the craft. And that's this oneness expression that all the beings seem to talk about, this oneness. You got to realize it's all one thing. Or as Jan Hartzim is the international director for MUFON, when he got a hold of Ben Rich, he said to Ben Rich, he said, Ben, I always wanted to know. He was the head of Lockheed Skunk Works. He said, I wanted to know how a UFO flew. How did they get here, Ben? I need to know the propulsion system. And Ben says to him, let me ask you a question. What do you know about ESP? And then John Hartson says, oh, it means everything in time and space is connected. He said, that's how it works, and walks out of the building and gets in his car and drives away. And that is, I think, how it works. It's all one thing. It's all connected. And there is no out there, as John Wheeler said. So I remember I had an interview. I've had four encounters where experiencers say, oh, the beings, they want to talk to you. So the one time there's these two women in Great Britain who were in contact with what was called the beings. And they wanted to talk to me. So, of course, the question I asked them, I said, well, are you ETs? And they said, oh, do you want us to be ETs? We can be ETs if you want. Said, we could actually take you to our planet if we wanted to. But no, we're not ETs. We've always been here. You're the visitor. And I was just floored. I went, holy cow. And that's, you'll hear this over and over again. They'll say, we've always been here. And so people say, oh, they're hiding under the oceans. That's what they mean. They're doing this sort of stuff. But you come down to this idea, and this is in quantum physics, been brought up in physics. Is there such a thing as time and space? And that's where this Ron Johnson thing, where he's, you know, 70,000 light years in 1 second, you start to wonder, like, I mean, is there really time and space? What's really going on here? Or where they say it's within you. So if you've ever listened to the intro that Stephen Greer does for his meditation, he always uses this Sufi expression. And the Sufi expression says, you see yourself as a puny form when within you, the entire universe is enfolded. And that starts to explain, why are they telling you to look within yourself? Or Rumi said the same thing. It's all within you. Jesus said, you look here, you look there, you will not find it. The kingdom of God is within you. And it's this concept is there may be not any time and space. It may just be a singularity. So I would say there are no ETs, physical ETs from other planets, because they're locked into their planet the same as we are. The reason we cannot get off this planet is not because the aliens are going to shoot us down if we try to go off, or there's a big bubble that stops us from going anywhere. The reason we can't get off the planet is we don't understand the oneness concept, that it's all one thing, that it's all here, it's all now, and it's all this consciousness thing. That's why they say, go within yourself, it's within you. And that may be the idea where I said, if you float away from your body, you realize your brain is inside your consciousness, your head is inside your consciousness. If you look around, the stars are in your consciousness, the room is inside your consciousness, everything is within your consciousness. And then you start to understand why they may not want to talk about this, because they're trying to figure this out as well. And they must know what I know. I mean, I've got enough people that are telling these stories about this idea that it's all within you, or it's an out-of-body experience, and everything is contained within you, and there is no out there. It's all like a deck of cards. And you have this sort of the idea of the singularity, that it's so far beyond what we believe, because we actually believe there are planets and there are stars out there. And it's the whole idea is, yeah, it appears there's stars and planets out there, but what if it's all within our head? And this is when you get into the real sort of spiritual stuff. That's what the people seem to be saying. And so the people on the other planet can't get off their planets because until they understand the oneness principle. And once you understand the oneness principle, then you can go through time and space. And the people that are interacting with us may be higher spiritual beings. They may be higher dimensional beings. They may be ETs that have learned how to get off their planet by understanding the oneness concept, that it's all here and all now. There is no out there. There is no time and space, this kind of thing. So it's all of the above. But the way I look at it is, I say God did not create the heaven and the earth. God created the sparks of the divine, and they created the heavens and the earth. Because if you look at the dual slit experiment from the quantum physics, you see that material matter, the atom does, or the particle does not appear until there's an observer. Until then, it's a wave potential. So the universe is a whole wave potential, and when there's an observer, it turns into matter. So these beings would be at higher frequencies. God is consciousness, or whatever you want to call it, is consciousness. It's still, and once it starts to vibrate, as the Hindus say, once it starts to vibrate, the illusion begins. So what you see is we're vibrating at a very low level. You see this with out-of-body experience. People will talk about this. People who are having UFO experiences will talk about this, that this is very dense. When they're coming back, it's very, very dense. Or when they're around the beings, they can't stand to be around the beings because the beings are vibrating at a very intense rate. And it's very hard to absorb when the beings are in very close. And so that's what it comes down to. It comes down to this idea that it may all be consciousness. There is no time, space. It's all a singularity. It's all one thing. And when we learn that, then we can go wherever we want because it's all within ourselves.
Wondering, have you got a sense in talking with these people who have claimed to have flown UFOs, whether they feel, weight or not, because that might determine whether this is actually a physical object or whether it is, you know, one of these portals or something.
Well, no, they do describe, but that's the whole deal, is that you can create whatever environment inside the craft you want. So there's nobody's described anti-gravity, that they're floating around or anything like that. They all are inside this, but they've created their sort of own atmosphere. Like, you even have this idea that people have brought up for years, that they're able to create a bubble around the craft, and that's why they don't leave a shock wave or anything like that, that they're able to separate themselves from the environment around them. Or one of the people who flew the craft is Susie Hansen, who's written two very important books on her experiences over the last 30 years on board the ships and what she was taught and stuff like that. And she describes the fact that they took her and she was allowed to fly the craft, and they showed her how to do it with a stick and with her mind. And she said it was much easier with the mind. With the stick, she was flipping the craft upside down and stuff like that. And so she describes that when they take her back, she says she believes that she was in North America because the leaves were off the trees and stuff. And then she figured, I must be on the other side of the world. And they said, we're going to take you home now. We're going to go through the earth. And you'll hear this all often, that a craft will fly inside a volcano, or it'll fly directly into the water and not leave a splash or anything like that. And she said they're going to go, and she freaked out. She said, you're going to go through the earth. And they said, don't worry about it. And the way they described it is they're going to change their vibration. So the earth is vibrating at one frequency. They're going to change their vibration. And she said they took her through the entire earth as she was going back home. And just almost like to teach lessons. That seems to be what they're doing, is they're not directly telling you what they're doing. But when you start looking at this sort of stuff, you start wondering and you figure it out for yourself. Like why are they describing this oneness process? Why are they describing the craft being alive and stuff like that? People actually talking to the craft, giving the craft names and stuff like that. But again, if I were to go back and interview these people again, I would have asked all these questions. But when the first woman gave it to me, I had the consciousness download experience in 2012, where I was, I had the absolute certainty that this whole thing was consciousness. And I didn't really know what consciousness was or whatever. I thought it was the ESP component or whatever. So in 2013, I was in Phoenix, and I was Stacy Wright, who was running the group at the time, said, oh, you're still going to talk to Pam Dupuy? And I said, well, yeah, I guess so. I thought, well, I must have agreed to talk to this woman or whatever. She said, that's good. She's coming to the house on Monday and you can talk to her. And so this woman comes to the house. I have no idea what's going on. She comes to the front door. She says, what did Stacy tell you about me? I said, I don't know. She just said I was supposed to talk to you. Sounds good. Comes walking in, starts telling me I'm an abductee, and I was abducted as a young kid. And I remember sitting in a diaper and watching the craft fly away, and I'm a remote viewer for the government and this and that. And you've heard all these stories. So she's going through all these stories. I'm going, yeah, okay, whatever, whatever. You know, she's telling me the stories. It's all very interesting, but I've heard it all before. And then she says, she's like in her 70s, and she says to me, she says, oh, and I was flying the craft last night. And I went, you were what? This is 2013. It's like 40 years I've been in this thing. I've never heard such a stupid thing in my life. And that's why I say why it's so important, because if you are going to make up a story about being on a craft, the part you don't want to add is like, I was flying the craft. Yeah, sure you were. It's like totally absurd, as Valet describes it. So much of the UFO phenomenon is absurd. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, why would they do these stupid things? And I think it's to make you think. It's to make you, what is going on here? And so she's telling me this, and she said, yeah, I was flying the craft, and all I could think about was the Saudi Arabian women who at that time were not allowed to drive a car unless there was a man in the car. And I'm going, they let you? I'm not looking at her, a 70-year-old lady. They let you fly the craft? She said, yeah, I've flown three different models. And I was ready to throw her out of the house. I cannot believe I'm putting up with this. It's like, and so like sometimes when you're at a conference and someone corners you with some crazy idea or whatever, and you're trying to get away from them, this is what it was like. I was like, oh my goodness. And then I said, well, so how do you fly a craft? And she said, oh, you do it with your mind. And as soon as she said that, I realized why they set me up with this woman. And then the next one came, and the next one came, and there was suddenly these people were coming, and I'm going, hey, suddenly all these people are coming to me that are flying the craft. And they were all basically telling this same story. And it was Pam Dupuy that told me this story, that she went to the Crystal City, the city where people are, it's an up and down city where there's people walking upside down and right side up on this sort of a crystal thing, and you can see the people below you, and the people below you can see you, and just bizarre, and all the different types of crafts she'd flown, and how they move the crafts around, and how they started with bands, which I heard in the early days, that the way they would describe it to people is that the pilot would have a band around their head picking up their brainwaves, which is what we're getting into now, this picking up the brainwaves and interpreting when the brainwaves are saying. And then it went to lighter and lighter bands around the head. And then she said, now then they didn't use any bands at all. And that's almost like to lead us to the idea that it's this consciousness thing that does it. But that was the thing, is I had no idea what these people were talking about. It seemed like a regular sort of abduction experience, except it was this training thing. And a lot of experiences, there's two of them that I talked to who told a story. Oh, I've heard it in various versions. They're sitting in a circle as kids, and they're looking, and they can't, there's the instructor, they can see the person from the waist down, they can't see above, and they're being taught to levitate balls. And there's these three different color balls, and the one's very hard to do, one's sort of easy to do, and one is very hard to do, and they're being told to levitate stuff. And it's this training thing, and the question is, why are they teaching people to train this stuff? And it's almost like they're moving us to this thing where we're moving from the physical world to this idea where the mind is going to control things, that they're teaching us what we can do with our mind. And when you see what these people on the ship, the stuff that they describe, especially when you start talking about the craft being massive on the inside. And I even talked to Chris Bledsoe, and he said he was one of the few people that actually got to go inside the craft. And he said, I looked outside the craft, and he said it was like 30 feet. I looked inside, and it was huge. I looked outside again, it was 30 feet, and I looked back inside. And Hal Puthoff said that. He said, I would like to know, how can they make the craft bigger on the inside than the outside? That is not the physical world. And even the ones on the ground that they captured, Len Stringfield had a report in 1974 that I just found. And that was the one where the guy was filming the panels inside the board, inside the craft, and he said that the craft was huge on the inside. And so this goes back an awful long way, and you would say, well, you know, we simply cannot have this kind of technology, or the technology to go, although the jump room technology we may have. I should correct that. I've written in a book called UFOs and Portals at Mount Shasta. And I talked there where the CIA wanted to send somebody with me to this is a Mission Rama, where I say throws more questions into what's actually going on. So you talk to Mission Rama. I'm not familiar. I'm not sure if you know who they are, but it's a group that started in Peru in 1974. And there's about 25,000 of these people around the world. It's still mostly Latino people. They're spread around the world, and they have their encounters, but they never have grays. They never have reptilians. They never have mantids. And they basically see like human beings with they're muscular, like Phillips the swimmer. They've got long, beautiful hair, and that's all they ever see. And that gets the interpretation is, you're part of the experience you're seeing. So in 1895, people are seeing wooden ships with balloons, and these guys had beards, and they were hanging off of ropes, and they said they were from Mars and stuff like that. And the phenomena just sort of keeps changing. So the phenomena is just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. And anybody that says that they got this technology, I'll say I doubt they've got this kind of technology that you see, because I just haven't seen it. And the high level people are reporting this fact that it's called the core story. We've got hardware, but we can't turn it on. We can't do anything with it. And the beings have even said the hardware is a trap. If you get into this trap, then you're gone, because we think it's going to be, we're going to get the engine, we're going to take the engine out, and then we're going to get rid of the aliens, put them on reserves or something, and then we're going to fly the craft around, and we're going to make lots of money on this thing. And they basically say, no, that's not what's going to happen. That we've had this technology since maybe Roswell, where we recovered a partly intact craft, and we still, there's no evidence that we've got any of this technology as far as I can see.
We'll open up the phones for those who'd like to join us with Grant Cameron. It's 503-506-0396. Again, that'll work inside or outside North America. It's 503-506-0396, or you can Skype ITP51. We do have a question from our YouTube chat room from Grandmaster, who wants to know about how the UFOs work specifically, whether or not it's dealing with the electrogravitic, magnetic, kinetic propulsion, or levitation. What say you, Grant?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There may not even be a craft. If it's within us, it's all made out of consciousness. So within us, we've created this craft. We're part of the deal. But so there is.
I want
no,
to clarify, because people do say that they are seeing craft sometimes. So are there?
You're seeing craft. The same as when you go into a lucid dream experience, people will tell you the lucid dream is more real than the real world. Or so the question is that an illusion, or is this an illusion? Because the people in the lucid dreams and in the out of body experiences will tell you that world is more real than this world, and they'll say you're the ones in the dream. That is the more real world. And so the question is, what's really going on here? Is this a lucid dream that's going on here? What's really going on? So people see crafts. Yeah, the same as you may see a craft in your dream and it'd be very real and whatever. But the question is, what's really going on? I'll give you an example. I did a book on psilocybin. So I did 25 high dose psilocybin sessions. I wrote a book on the first 15 of those sessions. And while I got into that field, I was dealing with people who are experimenting with all sorts of stuff. And there was one who was an artificial intelligence expert who was working with DMT. And he phoned me up one day and he said, "Hey, Grant," he said, "I had an abduction experience last night." I said, "You had a what?" He said, "An abduction experience." I said, "Like a real one?" He said, "Yeah, it was as real as real." And he was doing DMT. And if you go back to the Strassman, the experiments that were done at the university in New Mexico, Strassman, the guy that was running the DMT experiments in the 1990s, never made it public. He always kept it secret that half of the people who had the experience were seeing beings. And he said the beings were as real as real. This is more real than the real world. And that one quarter of the people had the abduction experience. So the question is the person having the abduction experience having an abduction experience? Are they having a dream, or are they on a DMT experience or whatever? Because when this DMT experience, the guy was on a couch for 10 minutes, and people will describe in the DMT experiments, they were gone for two and a half thousand years. So you start, and same with Chris Bledsoe told me when he had his abduction experience, he said, he was gone for 4 hours. He disappeared for 4 hours. And all these four people that were with him were looking for him or whatever. And then suddenly he reappeared. And he said, when I was with the beings, which were tall, 7 foot, bluish green beings, he said, they had taken me to Egypt. He said, I was gone for 4 months. He said it was four hours on this planet, and there it was 4 months. So everything goes out the window, time, space, all this kind of stuff. So the idea of electrogravitics is the whole idea that we can manipulate, that this is how they're doing it. They're taking a physical craft and they're moving it around. It may not be a physical craft. It may look like a craft. And I'll say that you can look at all the experiences, all the crafts, and they all look different. 1890, there were wooden ships with propellers. Then they were Foo Fighters on the edges of planes, and that it was not flying. flying saucers, and then they became green fireballs. Then they became the Adamski crafts with the balls under them, and then they became the classic flying saucer. Then they became the triangles. The triangles didn't appear till I saw one in 1976. They didn't appear. Then you had, now we have the orbs. The big thing now is the orbs. We've actually started an academy to look at these orb things. This is unbelievable. The phenomena is morphing, and that's what they said at Skinwalker Ranch. They never did the same thing twice. Or if you look at the beings, there's actually a book that was put out of all the beings before Betty and Barney Hill. And if you look at all those beings, there was no grays, there was no reptilians, there was no mantids before 1961, and all the beings were different. There was no two beings that were the same. And you would see the stuff where the being was like 1951 and had a bubble helmet on it, and it had a hose going down into a tube on it, a thing on its back. And you could see clearly all these people describing these aliens with bubble helmets. And you're going like, well, that's 1940 science fiction stuff. And it's like we're interpreting based upon our thing. So we're going in there, we're building this whole thing. And that's the whole thing. It's all consciousness. The physical world, you can create the physical by observation, but you have physical stuff in a dream. I'll say to you, when you're in a dream, do you have time and space in a dream? Absolutely, you have time and space. You're walking around and it's taking time and whatever. But is there time and space in a dream? And you'll say, well, no, it was just a dream. It took 2 minutes. But that's the thing is when you get into this dream world and stuff, you start to realize this is maybe what this is, because people are describing the same thing, the 360-degree vision. I'll give you another example. Ron Johnson, who is the guy from Utah, says to me, I told you, all these people are describing the craft being bigger. So he said, LB, and this is the other thing is that indicates this may be spirit guides, is everybody describes, I always wondered, like, why are people never see the same being all the way through their life? They'll see the grays, then they'll see the reptilians, then the mantids will appear, then they'll have these beings and those beings. And I'm going, well, what are they handing somebody off from one spacecraft to another? Like, why are these beings all changing? And so Ron Johnson had told the story that he was with LB. And people usually only deal with one being. So they may encounter a lot of beings, but there's one particular being that they deal with that actually tells them what's going on and stuff like that.
All right, hold that thought. Grant Cameron with us. We will wrap up our conversation right on the wild side after this.
The conjunction of two planets will provide a spectacle this weekend. Venus will pass Saturn on Sunday and appear close enough together to be seen by the naked eye or through a telescope. The planets, along with a crescent moon, will put on a spectacular display at dusk for the next few days. Saturn will be about 75 times fainter than Venus. Your best bet to see the show is about 1 hour after sunset from a clear and unobstructed view of the west-southwest horizon. I'm George Henry, Paranormal News.
I remember being lifted up into a spaceship.
Next thing we knew, we were in this big white room, and standing in front of me was this slimy two-legged creature with these wide lizard-like eyes across its face.
I was probably conscious for 5 seconds before they put me out.
They are transported up on this energy to the UFO.
I was sitting on this, what looked like an autopsy table.
Literally shot up to about 1,000, maybe 2,000 feet in an instant.
He said that he wanted to show me something, would I come with him, and I didn't want him.
Into the paranormal.
Right on the wild side, Grant Cameron is my guest tonight. 503-506-0396, the call-in number inside or outside North America. 503-506-0396. And on Skype, it's ITP51. You can just push to talk at paranormalradio.com as well. Fantastic conversation that we've been having with Grant so far. The title of UFO Sky Pilots, Pilots of Peace and Oneness. And he explained to us the oneness before, but also bringing it home for us as you're talking about, dealing with primarily one being what from a larger civilization, Grant?
Well, in everybody, if when I look back, I can see that everybody, when they start to describe it, they'll describe this being, that being. But when I say, okay, who did you actually deal with? And they'll say, oh, I was dealing with Daw. If you Shirley Wilde, it was Daw. But she had all sorts of other beings, but it was Daw that was the one that was talking to her. And I started to wonder, or you even go back to Adamski, he had the one guy that he dealt with. And it's like, well, why do they deal with all these beings? And then I'm starting to think, well, maybe that's the spirit guide. And Ron Johnson told me the story that crosses over. You see over and over again, you cross over into this other world of what is really reality. Like my AI friend who said, I was on an autopsy table. They were working on my head. I couldn't see their heads, but I could see their arms, and they were working on my head. It was a classic abduction experience. I was doing DMT. And you start to wonder, well, who are these beings, or why is there only one being talking to them? And you get these crossovers in the spirit world where Ron Johnson says LB was the being that he dealt with. So LB said the first couple of experiences seemed very physical. They had the sexual stuff with it. And then he said it all was the last 40 years has all been this sort of out-of-body experience stuff. And he said at one point, LB took him three times to the spirit world. The first time he was in like sort of a dark, sort of, it wasn't an evil place, but it was sort of dark and nothing was really happening there. The second time he was with his dead mother, and he couldn't see his dead mother, but he could hear her and he was talking to her. And then the third time he was with her, he said he was actually in a place. And this is the whole thing. Was he actually in a place like this, or is this like a lucid dream? So he said it was a pasture place and it was beautiful green grass and stuff like that. And his mother was there and she was so happy and he was talking to her and they were walking around. And then he said there was this, he's a very heavy Mormon guy. So he says there was this building that looked like a temple in Nephi, Utah. And it's a little tiny thing. And he said, my mother says, Ron, when you die, he's got very bad heart condition. Ron, when you die, you're going to get a room in this building. Your father's also already got a room. And he said, like, the side of the building opened up and you see his father in this room inside the building. She takes him inside the building and he says, I walk inside the building and he says, it was like 10 or 100 times the size inside as it was outside. And I said, hey, that's exactly what the sky pilot people say. They say the same thing. So are they flying now? Is he flying a flying saucer now? Or is he in the spirit world? Or what's going on here? He's described exactly the same thing. He said it was like 10 or 100 times the size. And then the other thing he said, his mother's showing him inside this building. He said, at the far end of this room, he says, that there was this table there and there was these crystals that were coming out of the table. They were half in the table, half out of the table. And he looked and his mother says, everybody has a crystal, Ron. And she says, when you die, you'll have there's no crystal for you here. But as soon as you die, this crystal will come out of the table and you look at your life through the thing. And that's Michael Newton. It's clearly Michael Newton. That's where he talks about you go into this in the between lives and you go into these library things. You open up the book and there's this crystal in there and you look sort of sideways at the crystal and you can see your past lives and your future lives and you're planning your life and stuff. And he says, there's all these crystals. And then he sees, oh, his dog's crystal is there. So he looks at his dog's crystal and he says, I never knew how my dog died. And he said, I looked and he said, I saw that the neighbor shot the dog. And if you go back to 1988, they have a documentary. It's called UFO Cover Up Live. And on there, they had the guy who played the Falcon. And he said, the most amazing thing I saw. And if you go back, it'll ring a bell because you go see. So the most amazing thing I ever saw from the aliens is they had this crystal. And you looked at the crystal. They would hold the crystal in the hand and you could look at it from a different angle and you could see all back through history, through the world's history. And you could actually see the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. They showed the government the crucifixion of Jesus Christ in this crystal. And I said, yeah, that's exactly what Ron Johnson's talking about. That's what Michael Luton's talking about. And so you start to wonder, like, there's these crossovers, even the idea of the being. Who is the being? So my father died about 15 years ago. Just before he died, his father came to him in the room about 2 days before he died. He never told me. He told my mother. And my mother says, really, really? Your dad was here? So what did your dad have to say? My father was really sort of skeptical and wasn't having a good time when he was dying. And he said, he was just here. That's all you need to know. And so the question is that really my father's father? Now you'd say, yeah, it is. It's the ghost of my father's father. So he can come in, take on a physical form, the same as the aliens, come in. And the question is, if reincarnation is a fact, then my grandfather lived 1,000 lives. So why did he come as my father? Why didn't he come as some centurion from the Roman days? Because my father wouldn't have known who he was. It wouldn't have meant anything. So they can appear in the life between life books. You'll see this, that people will appear to another person based upon the time when they really had a good time together, because they've lived all these different lives, that you can take on this form. So people will say, yeah, there's a physical craft. Yeah, it's all very physical. They can make it very physical. But again, we're making the physical world here. That's the whole quantum thing, that when the quantum wave breaks down, when an observer, then the material particle appears. Not until then, it's in some other world or in this quantum wave or whatever, that we're sort of misinterpreting what's going on. And that's the part I say, is there may not be a physical world. It may be a world, like I said, God made the sparks of the divine, and we're creating the universe. We're creating it with our mind. We're building the universe, and we're doing it in the spiritual world, and we're doing it in the physical world. So we can build buildings in the physical world, make the world a more magnificent place, add more intelligence, and the universe gets more intelligent and more grand and bigger buildings. But you could also create a spiritual world. And the prime example of that is in the 1970s. There was an experiment done in Toronto. There was 8 parapsychologists did this experiment where they created a ghost. His name was George. Was it George? And he was from the 1600s, and he had a big estate, and he started to fool around on his wife with this woman, and then his wife found out about it, and she brought it up, and then he accused the woman of witchcraft, and she was executed, burnt at the stake as a witch. And then he felt really reluctant about this, and he went up into the turret of his castle and jumped off and committed suicide. So they made this whole story up, and then they're sitting there and trying to make this ghost appear at a Ouija board table. So they're sitting there, and they couldn't get anything to happen for a whole year. And then someone says to him, why don't you do it like they do in seances? So instead of meditating, why don't you start singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall and have a real happy time? That's what they do seances. They're trying to raise the vibration of the room. Everything's sealed off. They're trying to raise the vibration, and then the being lowers it to vibration, and you meet it in the middle. So these people then started singing or whatever, and next thing you know, the table's tipping. And they filmed this whole thing. They wrote a book about it. They had documentaries about this, and they actually created this ghost, and it would talk to them. It knew itself as Philip, and they would have all these songs, and then one of the 8 people wouldn't appear, and they would miss the session, and the song that person had brought up, George didn't know the song anymore. So you could see that they had actually created this ghost. And that's the whole thing. We can create in the spirit world. We can create here. So we can create negative influences. So yes, if we commit suicide, you're going to create this negative energy that some psychic or somebody's going to be able to pick up. So we're creating the positive and the negative in how we build the world. So we're the ones that are creating the positive and negative. People blame God. It's like, if I shoot you in the head, I mean, what are you going to blame God for? That means me. We're the ones creating it. So we create positive energies, negative energies, and we're building this world that's going out. And we misinterpret the world as a place like Santa Claus, that we're going to be given things. And the world is actually life, death, life, death, life, death, life, death. And animals are dying all the time. And we're the only ones that live a fair long period of time. And that's how it works. Death is not evil. Death is part of the process. And we want like Santa Claus. We want all this kind of stuff. And we're living through this. And it's all about experience. So that's why Newton's story, when you leave the physical world and you go in front of this council between 3 and 12 people, they say, oh, okay, Jeremy, how'd it work out? And then you say, oh, yeah, I was worked pretty good, but I was going to do this. But, I forgot to do this. And my mother-in-law was really upsetting me. And they go, time out. It's got nothing to do with you. It's got nothing to do with your mother-in-law. It's got to do with you. You planned the whole thing. You put all the players on stage. As Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage. All the men and women are but actors. They have their entrances and exits, and each man plays many roles. And that's what it is. We're coming in to learn these lessons, and it really doesn't matter. So what the difference would make? Say, 3 lifetimes ago, Jeremy, you found out you were abducted. And you go, oh, man, now I'm going to really be upset. I'm going to, for the rest of my life, I'm going to be upset because 3 lifetimes ago, I was abducted. No, you're going to go, hey, that was pretty cool. And it's almost like the movie. Like if you have a movie that says, I love you, and then the husband says to the wife, I love you, and I love the kid, and the kid loves you, and then love, 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 love. God gets up with his popcorn, and he goes to the next theater over. He doesn't want to watch that. He wants to see Jeremy on the edge. He's got cancer. Is he going to survive? And it's this up and down, almost like I wrote the book called The Ride. And that the idea of The Ride came from Bill Hicks, and it's called The Ride. It's 2 minutes that everybody has to listen to. It's a comedy skit. This guy had to have an abduction experience. He had to have had some sort of experience. There's no way he could get it so exact. He said, life is like a ride at an amusement park. And you get on it, and it's so real, you actually think it's real. And you go up and down and round, there's lots of music, and there's lots of noise, and there's lots of lights. And then some people have been on the ride a lot of times, and they say, hey, you know what? I think this is just a ride. And then the people on the ride say, hey, shut that guy up. We got a lot of money invested in this ride. Hey, where's this? Shut him up. We don't hear this. And then you realize it's, when you get off, it's just a ride. We're on the ride. And it goes up and down. It doesn't just go up. It goes down as well. And that's what I think we're getting, is that you have these experiences and people are living through this, and we're learning. Hey, and you're learning lessons of whatever, you know, that you would normally learn in a lifetime, and we come back and back, and we have to redo the lessons until we get them right.
I want to play something for you real quick here.
There is a point. Is there a point to all this? Let's find a point. Is there a point to my act? I would say there is. I have to. The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round, it has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. Shut him up. We have a lot invested in this ride. Shut him up. Look at my furrows of worry. Look at my big bank account and my family. This has to be real. It's just a ride. But we always kill those good guys who try and tell us that. You ever notice that? And let the demons run amok. But it doesn't matter, because it's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer.
Amen. Yeah. Amen.
Yeah, yeah. He had to have had an experience. There's no way because he died very young of pancreatic cancer. I mean, he had to have an experience. There's no way he could come up with that, because that basically would sum it up. That's the way I would sum up the whole thing. So we really don't know at this point, you know, is it a physical thing? Is it a spiritual thing? This seems to be crossed over. And I don't know if you ever interviewed Ray Hernandez. He did the free survey of 4,000 experiences.
Yeah, so he seems to be a little bit at odds with this, because I offered Ray an opportunity to come on the program, because in your book, Sky Pilots, you talk about some of the experiencers to the free survey who responded that they flew the ship. So I knew that Ray was involved in the free survey. But he seems a little bit at odds with that statistic.
But he is now gone completely. Chris Bledsoe has, I'm moving there. Ray Hernandez has gone there, and he says it has nothing to do with physical ship. That's the problem he's got. This has nothing to do with physical ship. This is not a physical experience. This is what he goes full bore on the idea that this is God's consciousness, and everything is happening inside consciousness, or as Deepak Chopra says, everything is an activity inside consciousness, everything. And that's where Ray has gone. So Ray doesn't want to have the arguments. He doesn't like the word UFO. He doesn't want people talking about crafts and stuff like that, because he believes it throws us away from the idea that this is a very spiritual experience, that this is where it is. And that's basically what they told him. What his experience and my experience happened within a week of each other. Mine happened February 26th. His dog cure experiment happened the beginning of March. And Chris Bledsoe's experience happened a couple of weeks after that. And Chris has gone the same way. Chris is saying, no, this is not going to do it. I don't believe it anymore. It has to do with aliens and stuff like this. It's a spiritual experience. And if you see Ray's experience that he had, he came to watch me give a lecture on consciousness in Florida. And 2 days later, he was on the Miami freeway stuck in traffic and he's listening to NPR and he gets pulled up into this other reality or whatever. And he says they've got this wheel and the wheel is turning and it has remote viewing and psychic phenomena and UFOs and all of paranormal phenomena and it's spinning around. And the being says to him, you've got to quit parsing this stuff. It's all the same thing. And it's this idea that it's all consciousness and it creates very sort of manifestations so real that you really think it's actually happening. And that even the people who are at higher vibrational levels will tell you that you cannot even describe it. It's ineffable, which is the experience I had with the psychedelics. There's some things, there's colors you can't describe that you can't see on the earth here or things that you don't see on the earth. That how do you describe it? If people here have never seen this kind of stuff. And that's where I think we're headed for this thing. That I'll say that it is way less physical than people think it is. It is way more spiritual than people think it is. It's going to be at least 1,000 times more complex than people think it is. And I don't think it'll have a hint of capitalism when you get right down to who these beings are and what they're doing and stuff like that. And I guess I'd have to leave it at that. That's basically where I see we're going with this thing. And it just gets, it's almost like David Bohm, who is died in the 1970s, one of the top physicists of the 20th century, said to his fellow physicists, he said, you know, when you figure out all this quantum physics stuff, he says, guess what? He said, there's just going to be another level below that. And they go, no, there's not. Because we always think, oh, we got it all figured out. Like Max Planck, who the father of quantum physics, his professor in 1874 said, Max, no, he's going into physics. He said, you're wasting your time. We figured it all out. There's going to be nothing to do. That was 1874. And we always think we're on the final thing here. We just need one more piece to put in the puzzle. And then we've got it all figured out. The way I see it is like the more I look at it, the more puzzle pieces. They're all from different puzzles. And it's like, you just go like, wow. But you've got to listen to the experiencers. You can't learn anything from watching lights in the sky except to understand that something's going on. The experiencers, and you start seeing these patterns that experiencers are describing, like the flying of the craft or the oneness experience and stuff like that. And the more we see of it, we've only been at this for a couple of years. It was only 10 years ago I had the experience of consciousness. And until then, I couldn't spell consciousness. I couldn't care less. I had no interest whatsoever. And now I'm on this, I'm gone like totally off the map here. And Chris Bledsoe's gone that way. And Ray Hernandez has gone that way. Ray Hernandez refused to do an interview with me. And somebody wanted me and Ray Hernandez. And he said, I'd have to explain this to Grant. And I said, no, you don't have to explain it to me. I know what you're talking about. Oh, that was you. Yeah. Okay. So that's what he said. I don't want to. He said he'd have to explain it to me. So I wrote him and I said, Ray, I've been talking about consciousness for 10 years now. I've said consciousness is primary. Like, what are you talking about? You have to explain it to me. I'm the one that sort of taught him the whole thing and got him going down the rabbit hole of consciousness. And cause he just had his experience outside. He said, oh, if my wife is seeing these, well, I think I will see if I can call it in. And he's standing outside his house and he says, I looked over and I saw nothing happening. I'm waiting for this guy to bring these parking tickets or whatever. He's for court. He's going to write up something for court. And he said he's waiting. And then he said 15 minutes. Yeah, I knew nothing was going to happen. He looked over and he said it was like Wembley Stadium above the next door neighbor's house. And I mean, he just went off the deep end. His wife was ready to divorce him. He was like sleeping 2 hours a day. He just went totally. And he suddenly realized there was this consciousness connection. The idea that I brought this thing in through consciousness. That's when he put the consciousness in UFOs and my name popped up and he realized there was this consciousness connection. So he's moved a lot since then. He didn't believe any of this as well. So we're moving along pretty fast. It's the ability to grab that material. And I'm sort of sad that the free material isn't more widely known because that's what I said to him. I said, Ray, let's go back and let's look at the 13% of people who say they've flown the craft. And he says, well, you know, I went on the craft, people describe all sorts of stuff. And I said, yeah, but Ray, when they start flying the craft, don't you think we should at least talk to them? It's like, you know, they're all like, that was because it was so bizarre. It was this absurd thing that Jacques Vallée talks about. It's like, you're not going to make this story up. You're not going to make up the story that you flew the craft. You're not going to make up the story you could see it in 360 degrees. You could not, you're not going to make up the story that you went from here to outside the Milky Way in 1 second. You're not, that's kind of stuff. Nobody's going to believe it. So it's so absurd. They can't be making this stuff up, especially when all their stories agree. And so the more we get into it, the more we get these stories, and the more we're going to start putting this thing together. And I think they're sort of helping us, the indirect stuff. Like, that's what I say with the medals. I went to help put off. I wrote a book you didn't mention, but I wrote a book called Weird, The Paranormal World of Apports and Manifestations. That is the weirdest stuff I've seen. I mean, that's, you know, stuff moving around rooms, appearing, disappearing, all this kind of stuff. And it happens around psychics, physical mediums, happens around UFO experiences and stuff. And I just put these all in a book. And the one guy who was the expert, he's pretty old now, he said, it's about time someone did a book on this. So I did that one, and you get that kind of stuff. And again, it's like total Twilight Zone stuff where, you know, stuff. I did a PowerPoint in Laughlin, Nevada, and they messed up my PowerPoint. You should have seen it. They pulled slides, and they expanded slides and doubled slides and tripled slides, took the audio off one slide and put on another slide, which I say you can't do. And then I went and reloaded it in the hotel room, went back, and it did the same thing again. I mean, the kind of stuff that they're doing, and it's like little kids in grade one playing these little games. And I went to Hal Puthoff, and I said, Hal, you know, you got all this metal, you guys are collecting all this metal, and you're doing all this analysis and all this kind of stuff. I said, Hal, that's a Portz. You know that's a Portz. You know that Yuri Geller was in your lab, and he had Edgar Mitchell's flight pin in his mouth, and it's a Portz. And he said, one step at a time, we'll analyze it, and then we'll go from there. They know this is a Portz. They're dropping this stuff on purpose.
All right, Grant, final comment.
I say, basically, you came into the world to do something. When you leave, they're just going to ask you how to work out. All you have to do is figure out, why am I here and what am I supposed to be doing, and forget about everything else.
Well said. I appreciate you coming on, Grant, as always.
Thank you, Jeremy. Sorry I was a little late.
Oh, it's all good. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott. Good night, everyone. We'll be right back.